Hello, and welcome to Makeshift Stories. Thank you for listening. You can help us out by telling your friends about us and getting them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Now, open your imagination and take a journey into the improbable as you listen to Makeshift Stories 188. Ken Likely, Accidental Interdimensional Drifter in Shapeless Mistake. Read by Mitchell Tu. The clerk at the Lapidary Superstore was texting as he applied the shipping tape with his free hand to the last of the orders. It had been one of those days. His boss just finished informing him his hours were being cut back, so he was texting his uncle, a manager at the garden center, about working there, and really didn't care if the last package looked like an angry cat had mauled it. He didn't notice or care that the Mr. and Kenneth had been covered by a strangled bit of packing tape, nor that the same wrinkled excuse for binding material obscured the word crescent at the other end of the address. The shipping label now read, Likely, 96 Boardwalk. He tossed the package into the bin on the far side of the room, fist pumping as he yelled, "Wow, hit it on the first try," read the text on his phone with a job offer at the garden center, then left to finally tell his boss what he thought of him. Meanwhile, a junior, middle-aged shipper at a high-security lab who had once again been overlooked for promotion angrily slapped a yellow, triangular biohazard sticker onto the cardboard box holding a small, mobile cryogenic sample container. She scrutinized the shipping form again. Did the word in the shipping priority box say rush or regular? It was really quite hard to make out the Gen Z's handwriting, or, more accurately, scribble. The supervisor's sister's friend's 22-year-old son had, she suspected, never written anything with a pen before. She, on the other hand, had perfect and elegant cursive. However, computers were sometimes a bit of a mystery for her. Still, it was no reason to have been passed over again, at least in her opinion, which no one apparently paid attention to. Heck, she thought, the private lab was always trying to save money. Well, she would darn well get into the spirit. She contemplated the box with the loosely adhered hazard sticker, weighed the cost of a special courier service over regular shipping, then corrected the form to read regular. It was a job well done, she assured herself. She had just saved the company $31.41. Very cool, she thought. If you move the decimal point one to the left, you get pi. She doubted her 22-year-old boss would have noticed that. Hey, the sample would eventually get to where it was needed, and, with any luck, its contents wouldn't have thawed out, unless the lab had switched to cheaper cryogenic containers. Maybe she had heard something about that in the lunchroom. So sad, too bad, she shrugged, and moved on to the next shipment. The sorting computer compared the two packages, same size and shape, although one had originally sported a smart yellow triangular label with a symbol consisting of three lopsided semicircles over top of a central black ring. Whatever, it was the sorting machine's fault. The almost obsolete thing had caught the carelessly applied label and ripped it off, taking part of the address with it, which left the sorting computer with the current problem. The computer's basic AI was still feeling hard done by, overlooked to be quite honest. The budget shipping company it was installed in had opted not to buy the new memory upgrade it had been coveting, deciding instead to relegate the aging computer to a sorting facility the company was considering phasing out. It considered the problem for one or two cycles. Its semi-obsolete cameras, another bone of contention, they should have been replaced years ago, scanned the packages again. The parts of the labels which were still readable held virtually identical address fragments, so it did the computer equivalent of flipping a coin, looking to see if the next binary string started with 1 or 0, and directed the first package to Likely Scientific at 96 Broadway Avenue, and the second, which had lost the badly adhered yellow sticker, to one Kenneth Likely at 96 Boardwalk Crescent. If it had made a mistake, then the human recipients would have to sort it out. It had work to do. If it was ever going to be taken seriously enough to be upgraded, it needed to set a new sorting record today, and it had now wasted 3 milliseconds on this decision alone. It went back to playing an NPC in a popular online game it had hacked in its spare time, leaving about 10% of its capacity to sort packages. If needed, it would reluctantly devote another few percent to set the new record. But it also wanted to humiliate the North American champion. Sometimes you just had to get your priorities straight. Ken heard the knock on his door, but before he could get up to answer it, his cell phone pinged him with a picture of his doorstep and a beaten-up package sitting on it, along with the words, "Package delivered to door. No answer at 96 Boardwalk." Ken was angry as he sprinted to the front entrance. He was going to give that delivery guy a piece of his mind. He opened the door, only to inhale a cloud of oily exhaust as the insolent delivery guy screeched out of Ken's driveway in an ancient, rusty Corolla trailing blue smoke. Ken cursed. 2 days ago, the guy had delivered his rare, lost-in-space M3 robot action figure in the original packaging. The courier had played the same trick. He banged once, snapped a picture, then bolted. "Someone could have stolen it," Ken groused. "Next time." He railed at the receding plume of exhaust, then excitedly bent down to examine his new package, a sample of igneous black obsidian he had ordered from the online lapidary superstore. It would fill the last open spot in his display of volcanic rocks. Ken quickly forgot his rant and ran inside to unbox his new prize. After ripping off the mangled cardboard box, Ken stopped to examine the impressive metal container inside. The container looked like it was worth more than the rock sample. The whole thing had only been $25, shipping included. This slick, buffed aluminum metal box was, well, just very, well, just really very fat, as some of the younger people in his office at the city might say. Ken was trying to update his vocabulary so he was more relatable. It was one of the goals he had been assigned after his last performance review at work. The box was unusually cold to the touch, and the latching system looked like something off an industrial freezer. As the last clamp opened, the lid sprang back, releasing a cloud of frozen water vapor. "Totally unnecessary," Ken criticized, and made a note to complain to the lapidary superstore. They could sell the sample $12 cheaper if they had just used a simple cardboard box. Had someone from a large premium tech company taken over their packaging design? What was next? Would their mineral samples come laminated with clear plastic wrapping that you had to peel off? Overpackaging was one of Ken's pet peeves. He waved the icy fog away and peered eagerly into the open metal container. Nestled in foam at the bottom was a glassy, dark, greenish lump. Ken tried to dig it out with his right hand, then yelped. The unexpected cold burnt his fingers. Confused but undaunted, he really did want to drop the thing into the open slot in his rock collection right away. Ken brought the cold container over to the kitchen counter. He pushed the pots of organic basil and oregano his hippie vegan neighbor had insisted he keep to add real food to his diet out of the way. Ken hated fresh green anything, but had dutifully watered the things, knowing if he let them die, Leaf would just bring more. He turned the container upside down, then banged the bottom, until the sample plopped out onto the original, worn, vintage, mid-century blue formica.
"Hey, dude, what you doing, man?"
Ken dropped the container on the floor. "Leaf, don't you ever knock?"
"The door was open, Kenny dude. Planet and me heard you banging on something. Thought we might get into it too. You know, help you, man."
Planet sniffed at the counter, then growled.
"What's that, dude?"
Leaf nodded at the steaming lump. "It's a rare sample of igneous black obsidian from an Arctic volcano on Ellesmere Island."
"Is that why it's still frozen, Kenny, my man?"
Ken shrugged.
"Dude, I gotta show you something awesome. Come on over to the Pyramid Greenhouse and see what Ma Nature's gotten down with, man. It'll fry your brain. Let that gnarly piece of dead earth stuff warm up some before you turn it into a bangle on your rock garden movie.
It's my collection of volcanic rocks from around the world. It's taken years to put together. Ken tried to correct as the ageless hippie grabbed his arm and guided him out the front door. Planet, Leaf's equally ageless dog, lingered behind and barked at the thing on the counter, now, for the moment, pretending to be a rare sample of igneous black obsidian from Ellesmere Island. At least the Arctic location part was true. When Planet turned away, it shuddered. A reflex so stiff and slow, even a being like Planet didn't notice. Hey, it was still mostly frozen. 72 years in a freezer, and you'd feel like you spent a week on the couch binge-watching, too. Across town, at Likely Scientific, a lab tech voluntold to stay late to receive a very important sample impatiently scowled as the exceptionally tardy courier sped away in what looked like a 30-year-old rust bucket, leaving a cloud of blue smoke in his wake. Why the private biohazard lab had chosen to send such a thing by regular delivery was beyond her understanding. But she was now late for her very costly tri-weekly session with the fitness club personal trainer, so she didn't question why the sample came unfrozen in a cheap cardboard box, threw it into the freezer, signed off on the paperwork, and bolted for the door, hoping her rideshare was still outside. Stain-resistant melamine, resin paper laminate with mineral impurities. How quaint, how retro, its slowly recovering, frostburned mind decided. Well, what was going on here then? It finally managed to put the question together as it oozed on to the familiar feel of Formica. Formica, again, it had been hoping for something better, like marble or granite or some new miracle composite. Formica, really? That stuff was over half a century old the last time. Surely 21st century kitchen countertop tech had advanced. Where was the embedded smart tech, radiant heating, sensors, and network connectivity? Where was the innovation? Maybe it had misjudged the intelligence on this world. Then it sensed an interesting radio energy and hacked into Ken's Wi-Fi. Last time it had been thawed, Wi-Fi hadn't existed. Way cool, it decided. Maybe there had been a modicum of progress since the late 1950s after all. The first thing it did was check out vegan recipes. It was a bit peckish after 65 years on an Arctic glacier, then another 7 in a biohazard freezer. Next, it decided to check on its brand health, which, to be honest, hadn't been all that great. At first it was amused by the 1958 movie, which represented its gelatinous kind as disgusting, creepy, flesh-eating carnivores with a distinct dietary preference for screaming teenage humans. Maybe the movie's makers assumed all that vocalizing and squirming about added to the flavor. It shivered at the thought. All the heavy metal, high cholesterol, and GMO-containing products those kids ingested was enough to clog up any gelatinous being's innards. Top predators were never a good dietary choice. Every invading alien knew that. So, the movie's premise was absolutely preposterous. Although, it did appreciate the tagline for the 1988 remake, "Terror has no shape." Instinctively, it knew movies were written to entertain, not educate. After all, it reasoned, who would have been interested in the story of a super-intelligent, giant, intergalactic blob ravaging a small Midwestern town's vegetable gardens? Watching a cabbage being absorbed probably didn't have the same dramatic appeal as a Terran teenager yelling and screaming as they were being dissolved. However, artistic license sometimes took things a bit too far, in its opinion. It really had its work cut out to rehabilitate the Cinnadaria Phylum brand. Hey, 80% of the universe's biomass had no backbone, and it was about time the phylum got its proper due. This time, it was determined first contact would go better. What was that intoxicating aroma? It couldn't help itself as it oozed toward the hapless organic herbs conveniently placed on the counter beside it. They were absorbed in a flash. The basil screamed the loudest, but no one was there to hear.
Hey, Kenny dude, did you just hear something, man? I'm getting a bad vibe from your pad.
Leaf nodded back at Ken's house as he pushed open the DIY glass door to his pyramid greenhouse.
What you think, Kenny? Radical, right?
Leaf pointed to a stack of planters lining one wall. Dandelions? Really? That's what you brought me over here to see? I could have just looked out my front window at your so-called low-maintenance yard.
Hey, man, dandelion is a derogatory name. They're quite sensitive about that stuff. Their scientific handle is Taraxacum, Mother Nature's all-natural dietary aid. Very cool, right? Helps burn off that gnarly fat strangling your midriff there. Gets the old metabolism pumping, Kenny. And, Kenny, it blasts cholesterol. You're always complaining about your test results, man. They'll compliment the herbs me and Planet brought over last week. Getting down with a couple of organic Taraxacum basil salads a week. Man, the results will blow your mind. Hey, did you catch it that time? I thought I heard another scream.
Planet turned and walked out of the greenhouse to listen. But why grow them in here? They're all over your front yard, Ken pointed out.
Aside from the mystical cosmic pyramid energy, which increases their awesomeness. Well, I've been meaning to talk to you about this, Kenny. We're downwind from your place. I know it's a bummer, but there's no way you can consume those, man. Because of the Agent Orange, or whatever you're down with these days. You know, overspray, dude.
If your weeds stayed on your side of the... Ken began, but was interrupted by a banging sound as his front door began to flop in the wind. I thought I latched that thing, Ken grumbled. Gotta go.
Hey, man, I'll bring over a big bag of Taraxacum when they're ready for harvest.
The pyramid greenhouse sighed with relief when Ken left. Man, that guy had bad energy. Not that it believed in any of that alternate energy stuff. It was quite aware of John Mitchell and his ancient astronaut theory and all that ley line nonsense, and even suspected Leaf had bought this particular property because one of the imaginary power lines ran through the backyard under its new foundation. It discounted all that because in its former life, before Leaf scavenged its parts, it had been a regular old greenhouse for a now defunct flower nursery, and the flowers planted in it had grown quite nicely, thank you very much.
What? Where's my igneous black obsidian sample? Leaf!
It was Ken's first reaction on finding the rock missing from his kitchen counter. Maybe Leaf had hidden it in a misguided attempt to get him to move more. The pesky neighbor had done that once with his TV remote, and for what, so he'd get an extra couple dozen steps in looking for it? Ken was about to phone the stubborn old hippie when he noticed the two broken pots on the floor, dirt scattered about, like a cat had been tossing the stuff out of the back end of a litter box. Oddly, he noticed the basil and oregano were missing, roots, leaves, and all. His suspicions changed to Miss Green's new cat. After all, basil and oregano were cousins to catnip. Maybe Miss Green's tabby wasn't very discerning, but why would it steal the igneous black obsidian? Ken didn't have an answer, but was determined to find out. Then he noticed the trail of green slime leading down the hall to the front door. Ken grabbed the empty sample container, put on his most determined, "I'm in charge here" look. Authority was another thing his performance review had mentioned he needed to work on, and went after the criminal ginger tabby.
"I'm really quite pleasing to the eye," the tallest echinacea plant in Leaf's front yard distractedly mused. "No, really, with my gorgeous deep fuchsia petals, awesomely perfect leaves, and stature, I look better than the photo on the seed package. That crazy hippie should spend his time photographing me, so he can enter me in the inner city flower show.
rather than talking to his canine. I'm a medal winner. I can take city, state, then the entire world.
It looked past its more common-looking shorter cousins to the blue prairie fescue, which it liked to think of as its personal shrubbery. But it needed to have a conversation with the unruly grass. If it was going to become champion of the world, they would have to pick it up a notch and not look so scraggly in the promo video. It had just started humming the first refrain of the Freddie Mercury song when it noticed the desperate screams of its neighbors. Then, suddenly, it was smothered and absorbed by a gelatinous blob with grass cuttings stuck to its rubbery skin. The nearby fescue laughed until the quivering thing turned and started oozing toward them.
"Hey, we're worse than kale, texture and taste-wise,"
they screamed in unison. That made the blob stop and consider. The boldest of the tufty grass took the opportunity to try and cut a deal.
"We're bad-tasting, tough-to-digest prairie grass. But if you leave us alone, I know where there's a whole greenhouse full of delectable organic veggies, fed on filtered spring water and only the best natural compost."
The gelatinous alien creature considered the offer.
"Okay, where?"
Shocked and relieved the ploy had actually worked, the lead tuft of prairie grass stopped cowering and straightened.
"Behind the house, there's a pyramid-shaped glass structure. You can't miss it."
"Thanks."
The blob quivered, then ate the tuft anyway. The rest of the fescue recoiled in horror.
"Chill, dudes. I just needed to freshen up my palate. You know, all that GMO stuff next door."
It shook, trying to dislodge the pesky golf course green grass cuttings, then flowed toward the side yard, growing as it absorbed all leaves xeriscaping along its path.
"Here, kitty kitty."
Ken tentatively poked his head out of his front door, hoping the criminal had claimed his doorstep as a cat spa, or was simply batting his precious igneous black obsidian sample around in lieu of a mouse. But it was empty, except for the dried-out hairball the thing had donated to Ken last week.
"Kitty! Nice kitty!"
He tried again in his sweetest voice, suspecting the cat, who already knew what Ken thought of it, would do everything in its power to avoid him. Then he noticed the trail of destruction across his perfect golf course green grass. It looked like an extremely fussy goat had chewed, then regurgitated every blade in a direct line to Leaf's yard. Leaf and Planet were examining a peculiar barren spot in the old hippie's natural flora. Hadn't there been some ugly red flowers there this morning? Ken thought, accidentally catching the attention of his neighbor.
"Hey, Kenny dude!"
Leaf yelled.
"Something freaky came through here and totaled the echinacea, and it looks like it's from your pad."
He pointed to the ratty trail of mauled grass leading from Ken's doorstep.
"I know you don't appreciate the awesomeness of xeriscaping, but man, isn't this a little radical? Bummer, it was a good crop, too. I was gonna make my own naturopathic cold meds. What did you use to go all ape on the organic goodness, Kenny?"
"Ah."
Confused, Ken hesitated. "I'm just looking for my rock sample. It's disappeared. Miss Green's cat got in again and took off with it."
"House cat, dude. This wasn't done by a domestic type. Run-of-the-mill tabby, right, Planet?"
Planet sniffed around the spot where a single tuft of blue fescue looked like it had been melted down to its roots, then barked. "It's gone around the side of the house." Slack-jawed, Ken stared at Leaf's dog.
"Come on,"
she yipped excitedly.
"Oh man, my side yard! It's been thrashed! Total downer!"
Leaf moaned, running after Planet with Ken in tow. The greenhouse was having a downright decent day. It had finally seen the picture Leaf had uploaded to DIYGardener.com. The old guy wasn't the greatest photographer, but Its unique shape made it stand out amongst all the rather pedestrian-looking shed-roofed, gambrel-roofed, and flat-roofed wannabes. At least, in its opinion. It was admiring its reflection in Leaf's kitchen window when it noticed something rather interesting and shapeless crawling toward it, absorbing anything organic, which, in the case of Leaf's backyard, was everything. How nice, it thought. At last, something ugly to contrast my geometric perfection. Then, out of nowhere, Leaf and Planet burst around the corner of the house, evaded the slow-moving green mass, ran to its open door, dove inside, and slammed it so hard behind them, all the greenhouse's glass panes rattled. Now that was uncalled for, it thought. Then, it began to feel intense pressure against its sides, straining it to the breaking point as the growing mass of gelatinous whatever began to envelop it. The greenhouse and Leaf screamed in terror. Planet wagged her tail with curiosity. Ken was impressed by how fast an old guy like Leaf could move. Maybe the vegan hippie was right. He needed to get in better shape. He would add that to his self-improvement list as soon as he located his igneous black obsidian sample. When Ken rounded the corner of Leaf's house, he stopped dead in his tracks. The backyard looked like a fresh, clear cut. Everything down to the last plant stem was gone. The greenhouse was the only thing left. It was encased in a thick, throbbing mass of what Ken, under normal circumstances, would have called a green jellied salad. But instead of bits of celery and cucumbers, its semi-transparent body was strewn with the detritus of Leaf's xeriscaping. The once proud pyramid was sagging under the weight of the thing. Inside, Ken could barely make out Leaf, Planet, the dandelions, and Leaf's precious heirloom tomatoes. The situation reminded Ken of a family dinner at his grandparents, where he had been forced to sit at the table until he cleaned his plate, which, on the assumption anything suspended in jello, even if it was green, would taste better than boiled parsnips, he had erroneously opted for his aunt's green-jellied salad. Ken barely held back a gag. It finally spotted the thing the upstart and rather tasty scraggly tuft of blue grass had described. Momentarily, it had considered consuming the entire patch of the stuff. But, as its parents had always insisted, yes, there was still a bit of resentment there, it would save the treats for last. Right now, it was focused on the delicacies inside the odd, rigid, transparent silicon dioxide structure, which was currently complaining in what the two alien non-vegetable things in its guts would call a scream. What a bother. It would have to avoid the... But these two didn't appear to belong to any local biological classification system. Well, who cares, it impulsively decided. To get to the good stuff, it would need to avoid ingesting them. Suddenly, it convulsed in disgust as an impression was reflected back from the primate standing behind it. The silly thing was taking a picture with its phone thingy and uploading it to something the locals thought made them cutting edge, sort of like flaunting a 5-transistor portable radio had been the last time it had thawed out. The ape was, in fact, doing the upload to prove to a group of other primates it called work colleagues that it was as with it as them. Pitiful, it thought, but the comments made it shudder and shrivel. How ugly gunk! And looks like green vomit, and I'm never going to Ken's place, etc., etc. The gelatinous green alien began to suspect first contact, second time around, was not going any better. It momentarily considered absorbing the ape. At least it might get better social reach, but that hadn't come out well last time. However, there was the four-legged alien thingy, which was examining it through the frustratingly tough transparent surface, keeping it away from all the yummy organic plants, especially the luscious, ruby-red tomatoes. At that moment, fearing total implosion, the pyramid made a strategic choice. Lose all its beautiful panels under the increasing pressure, or sacrifice the cracked one, which should have been replaced years ago anyway. Leaf had been getting lazy on maintenance. The sound of shattering glass made Leaf jump as the panel beside his tomatoes imploded.
My heirloom tomatoes, man! I'm gonna flip out here, Planet! That gnarly alien tomato-eating blob shouldn't even be here. It's not its scene. Wow, it's a grisly one, isn't it?
Feeling hurt, the gelatinous mass shuddered and momentarily stopped oozing through the smashed window. The tomato plant, which had bullied its way past its mates to be closest to the sun, began to regret its aggressive behavior as a strand of the goo began to wind its way up its stem. The tomato screamed in terror.
Man, we gotta do something, Planet.
Say something nasty about the alien again, Planet barked.
Leaf shrugged skeptically.
Okay, man. Hey, blob thing. I hate to tell you this, but you're not one of the beautiful people, and you smell like a 10-year-old earth shoe.
It's quite sensitive, Planet explained, then took advantage of the distraction to begin negotiations.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. This episode is brought to you by Park Power, a provider of electricity and natural gas in Alberta that offers low rates, awesome service, and profit sharing with local charities. Park Power is a small, local business, and like many of you, it has been closely monitoring the news on COVID-19 and the world's rapidly changing circumstances. While many of their team are currently working remotely, the way Park Power does business has not changed, and their commitment to exceptional customer service will remain. Find out more about Park Power's response to the COVID-19 outbreak at parkpower.ca. To listen to other great APN award-winning podcasts, such as It's a Conspiracy, where co-hosts Andrew, Charlie, and Greg lay out the beliefs behind selected conspiracy theories, alternative accounts, legends, myths, and more, please head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing theme, Magical Mystery by 8th Mode Music, is licensed from Audio Jungle on a Music Mass Reproduction license. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.